Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome to the Market Musings podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. And this time on the podcast, we continue our round the world tour with our next guest from Florida, USA. Now, I need to take quite a big breath for this introduction. So here goes. He started out as a hospital director of services and then had a complete change as he joined a team at stockbroker Stratton Oakmont. Sound familiar? It should do to anyone who's seen the film Wolf of Wall Street. He then went on to become the Vice President of Finance for Morgan Stanley, then an investment banker at Brownstone Park, then a Pink Sheets promoter. He hosts a radio show on Sunset Island Radio, and he's also the Vice President of a sports agency, Pass Sport. It's fair to say, an all-round serial entrepreneur. Hello and welcome, Michael Della Donna.
Good afternoon. How is everybody today?
Good, thank you, Michael. And how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
Good, good. And what's it like in Florida? Is it nice and hot and sunny?
It's actually, it's 83. It's sunny, but, very little humidity. So it's actually spectacular.
Oh, great. It's a lovely place. I've been there once myself. Yeah, it's a nice place to go and visit. So
it's even better when you live here. It's like being on vacation all year round.
All the time. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. So I believe, Kenny, you've been spending the last few days diving deep into Michael's book.
Yeah. Good to meet you, Mike. Pleasure. Obviously, you got in touch with us. I think it was Friday. You liked one of our tweets and made a comment. So I just thought I would reach out and have a conversation. And after doing a bit of digging, I said I better get to know this guy if he's coming on the podcast, because there's so much to know. So I downloaded your book, and I must admit my wife was not pleased, because I started reading it at the dinner table, and I was still sitting there 4 hours later. So I pretty much read your book in one sitting. It was a fantastic insight to what you've done in your life. So really, the best place to start with all these kind of conversations is at the beginning. Now, I don't know if you want to go back as far as maybe, what you'd done at, how you got into school or your family life, where you were born, or do you just want to dive straight into your working life? It's up to you, Michael. The floor is yours.
Well, yeah, I mean, I grew up in New York. I grew up in I don't want to say a small town, but, a town of, I grew up in Westchester County, which is right next to New York City. Mm-hmm. My city was small, about 60,000 people, but Westchester, the county of Westchester has about 7 million people in it. And you really don't know where one city starts and the next ends. And then you have, obviously, New York City, which has another, I think, 12 million people or 17 million people. So there's a lot of people in the area. It's where I grew up. I went to college, on a baseball scholarship. And, my degrees are all in food science and nutrition.
Yeah, I've got to ask you. Yeah, are you a Yankees or a Red Sox fan then? Just sorry about it.
Yeah, well, I'm from New York, so there's no way, shape, or form can I be a Red Sox fan.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a New York fan. I like the Mets and the Yankees. New York is is a sports capital here as well as a financial capital. Yeah. You have sports in every major sporting over on this side of the pond, New York has. They even have two soccer teams. And soccer now is becoming pretty big here in the States.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure how big, Man U Stadium is. But the soccer stadiums here are about 35,000 to 40,000 people. So,
yeah,
they sell out every match.
Yeah, I think Old Trafford's about probably 70,000 now, I think, from memory. So it's a fair old It's a fair old stadium. But sorry for taking you off track there, Michael. I'll let you continue.
No, it's fine. Listen. And anyway, make a long story short, so I left the food and nutrition business. Saw an ad in the paper for a brokerage business. I had a chance to go to a couple of major brokerage firms, but they had 2-year to 3-year training programs. And I was already, 26 at this time, 27, and didn't want to spend that much time training. And the ad was from Stratton Oakmont, and their ad said, as soon as you're ready, you could become a, if you could take the test to become a stockbroker. And if you pass, you could be a broker. So I figure, well, I'll give it a year. Hopefully it works out. So I quit the healthcare, went over to the brokerage 3 months later. But in that first 3 months, it was really intense. You know, they made you work from, 7:30 in the morning to 7:30 at night.
Yeah.
You were cold calling. You were making between 500 and 700 phone calls a day.
That's astonishing. How can you make 500 to 700 phone calls? I can't get my head around this at all. Because I know you mentioned it in the book, but even when I'd done the maths, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you just did it. You just dialed and smiled. and not being a salesperson, you don't know if you could do it or not. But I'm a numbers guy. And so nutrition is basically numbers, right? Being a broker is basically numbers. A little more, but it's all numbers. So anyway, to make a long story short, I became their top cold caller. Because there was also a way of getting paid extra when you cold called and your broker opened one of your accounts. I actually started training the cold callers. And then once you passed your test, which I did, which is the Series 7 license, which is a whole nother funny story because you need a 70 to pass it. 85% of the people fail it. It's a pretty hard test. It's an 8-hour test. You have 8 hours to finish it. I finished the test in 1 hour and 20 minutes. I'm one of those guys that kind of has an eidetic memory. So I'm not sitting there thinking. I'm just answering as I go through it.
Yeah.
And luckily, I got a 70.6.
So just scrape through.
No. 70's passing. So in my eyes, 70.6 was 100.
Yeah. a pass is a pass.
A pass is a pass.
Yeah.
So I got that. And then part of the training at Stratton was you had to open up 40 accounts for the broker who was training you. And typically that would take anywhere between 3 and 6 months to open those 40 accounts. And then once you got the 40th, you went on your own. My experience was I wound up being pretty good out of the gate. I opened up 40 accounts in 21 days. I was on fire for a while.
Yeah.
And so I went on my own, obviously, opened accounts, did really well. And Stratton was a great a learning experience. They taught you how to sell, the whole process of selling, how to set somebody up, how to close. And anybody who's listening, brokers, car sales, whatever you sell, the closing is the key. Mm-hmm. And, if you can't close, you can't get paid.
Yeah. So what was your typical cold call? I know it was obviously a while ago, Michael, but what was the, I've read you've got these kind of rebuttal books and, if somebody takes you down a path you don't want to go, you've got to try and get them back in the right path.
Right, that's a straight line. And over the years, I've actually improved and modified the straight line. So part of how you go the straight, think of a highway. Now, I've been to England, and I know none of the roads are straight. But think of a straight road. and it's 100 miles long. And every 2 miles, there's an exit, right? So yep. All you want to do is stay on that straight road because it gets you from the hello to the sale faster. And people always want to take you off in tangents. Mm-hmm. So what I've developed, and it's based off the original straight line, is you ask questions, you give answers with a question at the end. So there's a question that they're going to ask you back based on the answer you gave that's only going to have two answers. And you're going to be prepared to answer those whichever comes your way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
so you're getting them to think they're leading you, but you're leading them right down the straight path mm-hmm. until you close them.
Yeah. And how long would one of these calls last, typically?
Typically, you probably 15, 20 minutes. I mean, I went, one of my biggest clients, it took me almost an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the phone to him for an hour and a half?
Yeah.
A complete cold call?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I also developed a little technique because the straight line is you're just blasting through, blah, 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 blah. But what I always did was incorporate things like I would say, you know, Mark, you know, we'd go through the pitch and then we'd start talking about, gee, how many kids you got? Are you married?
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to answer? Okay. Yeah. No, I'm married. Yeah. No children.
Right. And I'm sure if you put 10,000 into this investment and you made 40 or 50%, your wife would be pretty happy, right?
I would imagine so. Yeah.
And what's your wife's name?
Her name's Sasha.
Oh, Sasha! What a nice name.
Mm.
But my point is, and then I'd go back into the pitch. But that little break would make Mark a little more relaxed.
Yeah.
Now I know he's married, he's got kids, and his wife's name is Sasha. So back going into the pitch, I could use that as I'm doing the pitch. You know, and then even on the close, which instead of closing, you always assume the close, which means I'm not saying, hey, Mark, do you think you should put 10,000 into this? That's not how you do it. You say, hey, Mark, look, for 10,000, you're going to get 2,000 shares of stock. Listen, and how it works, you have 5 days to pay for it. I'm going to send out all the documentation. Now, how do you want me to send this? Do you want me to send the confirmations to your home mm-hmm. so you can share the profits with Sasha, or do you want me to send it to your office?
Well, can I think about it for a bit, Michael? Is that all right?
Think about it, and I'm sure, you know, that's not a problem. And you heard of E.F. Hutton, correct?
No, I haven't. No, E.F. Hutton, no.
Well, E.F. Hutton, you know, when E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen.
Right, okay, yeah.
And you probably don't know about him anymore because they went out of business. They let you call them back. And that's fine. But you want to make money, you got to work on my pricing and timing.
Right, okay.
If you want to do it yourself, that's fine. You don't need a guy like me to make you money. But I'm telling you now, and then you just go back into the pitch.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just going off memory because it's been a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. I feel the pressure.
Yeah. You're hopeless, Mark. You would have bought any old shit, so you would have. Yeah. So, obviously, in your book, you ended up with a rather strange office in Stratton Oakmount, Michael, which caused a bit of, obviously, the stockbroken floor were not too happy with your office arrangements.
That was later on at Smith Barney.
Oh, right. Sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Think about at Stratton. And then I also, Stratton split off into a second firm called Monroe Parker.
Yep.
Which was actually 10 minutes from my house. Stratton was actually an hour and 5 minutes by a train. I had to take 2 trains to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you live in New York, you understand taking the train is better than driving into the city.
Yeah.
Because driving into the city is just terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually, when I was at the hospital, one of the hospitals in New York. It was 17 miles from my home.
Mm-hmm.
Not that far, correct?
Yeah, not really, no.
No, but in rush hour, in the morning, I'd have to leave 3 hours in advance to get there on time.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's why you take trains and subways.
Indeed.
But when it went to Monroe Parker, it was literally a less than 10-minute ride.
Oh, that's nice.
So that was very convenient.
So how big was Stratton when you joined? Was it a new firm or had it already been going?
It was there about a year and a half, I guess.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And so there was about 40 to 50 brokers and about 150 cold callers.
Oh, okay. Right.
And then when I left it to go to Monroe Parker, it was already up to about 200 brokers and about 500 cold callers.
After how long was that? Many years?
No, that was after a few months.
After a few months. Okay. So
and
yeah.
And then when I got to Monroe Parker, they started out small with 15 brokers and 50 cold callers. And when I left 9 months later, there were 900 people in the room.
Oh, gee.
And you have to understand, this is one room. There's no walls. There's no cubicles. You're in a room.
Yeah.
And the whole theory was that the energy level and the noise level would make you talk louder so that they could hear you over the phone and get the energy in the room going.
Yeah.
One of the things that is true is that when you're talking on the phone, and especially on the phone and selling, there's only one thing that comes over is enthusiasm. People can pick up on your enthusiasm when you pitch. So part of pitching is always be enthusiastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Convinces them that you really believe in that product or whatever you're selling.
But I think that's easy if you do believe in it. And would you say that you...
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I tell you right now, I've been hired to train car dealership, coin salesmen. You know, obviously other brokerage firms hired me. And I could say over 90% of the people have no clue what enthusiasm is.
Uh-huh.
Because not only do you have to have a pitch, a written pitch that you got to practice and then make it your own, right? Because you just can't read a pitch and expect people to buy it. You got to be able to know when to use voice inflection and slow down and speed up, get louder. But you got to have conviction. You have to have that enthusiasm.
And were
especially
you...
as you're getting towards the end near a crescendo, you want people to understand, hey, you got to buy this. I'm telling you, this is, and that laughs, but that's what brings people in. Because if they believe you're convinced.
Yeah, then they get convinced.
Right.
And was that, and I mean, did you always have that enthusiasm there? I mean, that must be exhausting, making 700, 500 calls a day to always have that same enthusiasm. Did you really believe in it, or was it just part of your sort of pitch?
Yeah, well, no, the 700 calls are when you were cold calling. Once I was a broker, I was probably doing between 100 and 200.
Okay.
But obviously, you have more time talking to the people.
Yeah, sure. But I don't know. And I suppose, as you say, the excitement and the fact that it's a small room, you know, it all builds and everyone bounces off each other. But I just imagine that after one exhilarating phone call to then go and make another one, I'd say it would be quite exhausting after a while. But
yeah, it was. You know, when you were younger, you had a little more energy.
Yes, it's true.
And you understood the more clients you had, the more chances you could make money. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going back 25, 30 years, right? And so I was building up to where I was taking home in my check over $100,000 a month.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's a lot of money. So, and they always had competition in the room. Like, I had to be better than the people I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mindset, right? That's not what you do, but if you're a competitive person, you want to be better than the next guy.
Yeah.
And so certain people I didn't like, And so your ego takes over, and then it becomes not only do you want to win, and I'll give you another example. We had a count contest every month. Every month, there was a big prize to win whoever opened the most accounts. And I never lost that competition ever, ever. Every month, I won the competition. It got to the point where they were giving two prizes out because I didn't care what it was. And if you have that desire, no matter what it is, whether it's selling or being a doctor or, you know, just whatever profession you choose to do, if you have that type of determination, you know, you'll be successful as long as you have the tools to be successful. Now, you asked the question, did I have to learn the excitement part? No, because I think I had it in me, but I never was a salesman before. So some people that, you know, that old saying, they're natural. That's the natural part.
So you moved on to Monroe Parker, and this is where this this office comes in. Can you maybe give our listeners an insight to what happened there? Because I don't think it ended particularly well for you anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you're jumping to like the end of the story.
All right, okay. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, Stratton was a very good learning place. Then I left when I realized, now again, my background's not in stock market, right? So once I realized they were crooks, I realized I got to get out of there. And Monroe Parker was in the same office complex as Smith Barney. And they had heard about how proficient I was at opening accounts and raising money. So the assistant manager of Smith Barney offered me a job as a broker over there. So I took it. Now at Smith Barney, it was very similar to Stratton. They had an OTC hot page where you could take stocks that had big commissions in them and sell them to your clients. And think about it. When I'm at Stratton, I got to explain who we were, who the clearing agent was. We used Bear Stearns, a whole separate company where you sent your check. It was a whole explanation. When I was at Smith Barney, they were one of the four biggest brokerage firms here in the States. Everybody knew Smith Barney. So my first month there, I opened up 151 accounts. I actually opened up more accounts than the other 47 brokers in the office did combined.
And
so I became the golden boy, which was good and bad. It was good because the manager liked me. It was bad because the other old veterans who've been there 15, 20, 25 years hated me. And because the manager kept saying, hey, go look at Deladonna. These guys don't want it. They don't care. So it made for kind of an unsettling type of. So anyway, I wound up getting an office in the back of the office. And it was a fairly big office. So I had my own two cold callers in there and me. And I set it up more as a, how would you explain? It was an office, but I had everything in there. And now I'm going back a while. So I had the big TV. I had the pinball machine. I had video games that just started coming out. So we had the video game console. I had a couple of soda machines in there. And we had a lot of fun. And I still was making a lot of money. So what Kenny's referring to is Morgan Stanley made me an offer to leave Smith Barney, a seven-figure offer to come over to them. So I took it. And then once I was there, the new manager did not like how I kept my office. And so it was actually she said a couple of things to me, but I had a contract. I didn't really care what she said. And then I came back over the weekend and all my stuff was taken out of the office. And so for the next 4, 5, 6 months, I refused to work. I showed up and just chatted on the phone with my friends. So they sued me, I countersued, and we came to an agreement and I left.
You left Morgan Stanley without even being there very long.
Yeah, I mean, it was just ridiculous because I wasn't going to work for them because they actually threw me out of my office and put me in the bullpen.
Oh, right, okay. So you tried to bring all your stuff from your office over from Smith Barney.
Because that was in my agreement. That was in my contract that I could bring my co-callers, my entire office, and run my office the way I wanted to run my office, as long as it was in the rules of Morgan Stanley. The woman just didn't like the fact, that I was playing video games.
Sure. You mentioned that you left Stratton because there were crooks. And I wondered if you could just explain a little bit more on that.
We were doing the company, was called United Restaurants. Hmm. And there was 2 million shares in the float. And just so your audience understands, there's the float is the amount of shares that are available to be bought and sold by the public.
Yeah.
As opposed to the amount issued, there could be 5 million issued, 2 million to float. That means 3 million are held by the insiders. So anyway, to make a long story short, the stock was a dollar, and we were getting 25% commission on the dollar,
mm-hmm.
which seemed a little high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's
right. But I wound up putting away a couple of million shares or whatever it was. But as a firm, we put away almost 17 million shares, which means we sold them.
Mm-hmm.
And the stock didn't move,
mm-hmm.
which sent up a red flag to me.
Yeah.
Now that I'm getting more into it and understanding how the market works, because for the first couple of months, all you're worried about is selling it, making sure you got the script down. Mm. The other thing is you have to memorize and be able to say the rebuttals correctly
mm-hmm.
and make it sound believable, right? So that's there's a whole learning process involved. So when I was talking to the guy over at the Smith Barney, because we shared the same like cafeteria restaurant type thing building.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one who gave me the insight, hey, you guys are crooks, blah, 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 blah. And so the more I looked at it, I'm like, yeah, there's a reason you get a check for 100 or 150 or 200,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I realized something is wrong, because when you buy stocks and in that volume, 6 times more than out is out there, the stock probably should go up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it didn't. So that's when I realized it and made the switch.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. And were some of the characters that eventually appeared in the film, Michael, were they around at your time?
Yeah. I knew them all of them. Oh. I mean, some of them... And again, I'm not going to get into names.
Yeah, you understand.
The actors who played the characters were spot on, and some weren't.
Mm-hmm.
It was the people who saw the movie. I don't know if you saw the movie Boiler Room.
No, I've heard of that.
Yeah,
it's a great movie. It's about the firm, just looking at it from the broker side.
Yeah.
And those are two movies about Stratton.
All right, okay.
Just so you know, when you watch that movie, we had a book of all the best rebuttals. And this way, when you became a broker, they'd hand you the book. You pick the 5 out you like the best. Memorize them, copy them, tape them to your desk. Now, I was pretty good at writing rebuttals. Matter of fact, I was also good at writing the pitches. 2 of the 3 biggest pitches that they ever had that made them tons and millions of dollars were 2 of the ones that I wrote. The best of all time was a pitch by Nestle's, which I have in the book. That was the first pitch I learned. It was an amazing pitch. It sucked people in.
Mm.
And I made a lot of money with it. And then I wrote two other pitches that the room took over. Matter of fact, Jordan even complimented me on the, I wrote a pitch about Kmart. They're bringing tons of money. They're right. All the brokers, 900 brokers were pitching my pitch.
So you would write, so people would just, would anyone just write a pitch, or was it was?
No. Brian, well, I'm not going to mention his last name. I shouldn't have said his first name, but he's kind of the manager of the room. He's, you know, he wanted to come up with a new pitch. He would write the pitches. He'd come out with them every month or so, every 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I said to him, look, give me a shot.
Okay.
I said, I'll write a pitch, and you let me know what you think about it.
Okay.
And so he said, all right, well, Kmart is doing it at the time. I don't know if you know what Kmart is.
Yeah.
They're like a competitor to Walmart for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he said, well, write one on this, because one of the things they wanted to do was always pitch someone in New York Stock Exchange stock,
mm-hmm.
right? Because everybody's confident. It's a New York Stock Exchange, big word. And then after you get them, you'd move them into house stocks on the small stocks where they control them. So anyway, so I wrote the pitch. I handed it to him the next day. He was surprised it only took me a day. And that was on a Wednesday. And on Thursday, he already had made copies and handed it out to all the brokers.
Okay.
He thought it was pretty good, and it worked like magic.
And then everyone just starts hitting the phones and doing that pitch?
That's correct.
Okay. And what about the rebuttals then? You say you people learn...
Oh, right. So anyway, so I used to write rebuttals as well.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, I didn't write the rebuttals. I just came up with the rebuttals as I was pitching.
Okay. Right. Right just now, on the fly. Yeah.
Right. You know, like... But in the movie Boiler Room, they actually had a copy of our rebuttal book.
Okay.
And a couple of rebuttals in that movie are actually ones I wrote for the firm that they just came into the movie with. But yeah, I mean, like the E.F. Hutton, I didn't write that one, but I liked that one, so I used it a lot. E.F. Hutton was one of the six biggest brokerage firms here in the States at the time.
Yeah, okay.
And their whole commercial was a shh. E.F. Hutton speak, right? So just listen. So when they went out of business, it was a great pitch to say, hey, look, they were so big. And at the time, it made a lot of sense. My pitch was, it came out of being aggravated with a guy. Mark, you run a company, right? Because they might say, well, let me talk it over with my wife.
Yeah.
Right? Great stall tactic.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Mark, you're the president of your company, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you make decisions every day to influence all the people that work for you and how the company does.
Sure, yeah.
Right. And I'm sure you're not calling up Sasha and saying, hey, Sasha, you think I should do this and this? Of course not. You run the company. You make the decision. For you to tell me that you got to ask your wife, you might as well just hang up the phone on me if you think I believe that. But I think you're much smarter than that. And I think you know what you're doing. That's why I think even if we step in at half, we'll buy $5,000. It's less. You're going to make less, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
But judge me on a percentage basis.
Mm-hmm.
I think next time you're going to want to work a little bigger and better. Now, do you want me to, do you have a middle name?
I have four names, actually.
There you go. And see, now I'm writing to the account form, writing your names out. you see what I mean? You just assume the clothes.
You assume it. And yeah.
And again, even back then, I would just as a sidebar, I would always ask for $200,000. Yeah. Now, most people would say no. Almost everybody said no.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter. Because I was going to battle with you. I knew it was just the start.
Yeah.
But to ask for the bigger number, like I want 200,000 euros to buy whatever. It's too big a number. But what does it do? It sets me apart from all them other smokes who come after them selling 200-300 shares.
Okay.
Makes them think that I'm a bigger broker.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So now we could work down. And I never took anything less than 10,000 bucks ever.
Okay. Well, and you were ready with your rebuttals for when then the objections came in.
Exactly. Yeah. I had them all down, knew exactly where to go.
Yeah.
Made them my own. Also interjected a lot of personal things as we went through them. Not through the first one or two, but, you know, even like in the initial, my cold caller got a lead from you. We would send you a magazine in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would call you up, you know, hey, Kenny, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well.
That's good. This is Mike getting back to you from Stratton. I hope you got the package we sent you.
Yeah, I had a good read of it. It was great.
Right. And see, now that would be half the people. I already know he's lying to me. Right? I already know that because there was nothing in the package. So when he said that, I went straight into the pitch. Well, the reason for the call, and I'll be brief, is that we have a situation here that we think could be explosive. The company is Nestle's. I'm sure you're familiar with them.
Yeah, I've had plenty of it.
And then I just go straight into the pitch. He's responded, answered three of my questions already. So I know he's going to let me talk.
Yeah.
You see the psychological thing about this?
Yeah.
Now, half the people, or less than half the people, would say, no. So I'll go, Mark, did you get my package?
No, I don't remember that, no.
Yeah, well, when you do, I know you're a busy man. It's probably floating around your office somewhere.
Right.
When you get a chance, please read it and especially check out my record. You'll see how great we've done with the stocks. But more importantly, and I'll be brief, and then I just go back into the pitch. So you just had to be able to blow through that first part and just get them interested in Nestle's. Because everybody knew Nestle.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody does. And then once you start speaking about how big they are, how they're literally a mutual fund, they're number one in 17 categories, from dog food to whatever. Right? And then you make the comparison. They're going on the New York Stock Exchange. Right? Last time Cadbury swept, are you familiar with Cadbury?
Yep.
Right? They got on, they went from $23 to $82, split 3-for-1, and they're sitting at $41. Pretty good run, wouldn't you say?
Sounds all right, that.
And then you go to the second one, bang, boom. You know what I mean? It was all one set up the next to set up the next. And your enthusiasm would run every time.
Well, thank you for listening to part one of our chat with Michael Della Donna. We've decided to split this podcast in two because the next part of the podcast where Michael talks about setting up on his own and the things he's done since the Stratton Oakmount days and the Morgan Stanley days, there is a lot more to tell. So tune in for the next one for part two when we will hear what Michael gets up to in his latter years. Thank you.